KCSN HD1 Northridge, Los Angeles, KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo, a service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.
Hey, I'm Carmel Holt, and welcome to She Rose Radio, a space that was created to turn up the volume of women's voices and gender expansive folks in song and conversation. We're here not only to amplify, but multiply those voices that you may not even be aware you're missing, but are still not heard in equal numbers on the airwaves and in music. So we get together each week for an hour of songs and interviews featuring the trailblazers and the new visionaries across genres, generations, and identities, hosted, produced, and powered by women and queer folks. To quote Gloria Steinem, revolutions come from combining what exists into what has never existed before. This radio revolution starts now.
Screens bear the facts, assume the die, and the vows no need.
couldn't be more excited about the new Brittany Howard album coming on February 2nd. What Now is the name of the album, and that's Red Flags on She Rose Radio. Also wishing Beth Gibbons of Portishead a very happy birthday on January 4th. We heard Sour Times, and with that, I welcome you to She Rose Radio. I'm your host, Carmel Holt. It is so great to see you, as always. And for the next hour, we are going to turn up the volume of women's voices in song and conversation. This week, our featured interview is with Corinne Bailey Rae. Now, another Shiro born on January 4th, wishing Katie Crutchfield and her twin Allison a very happy birthday. Back to Waxahachie's last album, St. Cloud, for this one. It's Can't Do Much on Shiro's Radio.
It don't matter what. About it now. Never had a clue. I'm probably they don't bat for my team, even if they knew. I felt like a mountain, I have felt like a mouse. I've heard poison words fall out of my mouth, but I can swallow my pride and apologize. If you give me half a chance, I will try. But let me tell you,
newcomer Joby Riccio and the song Sweet off her full-length debut that just came out in late September. And from Waxahachie, it was Can't Do Much, wishing Katie Crutchfield a very happy birthday on January the 4th. And if you missed our She Rose interview, check that out in the archives at sheroseradio.com/episodes. I'm Carmel Holt, and next, it's a She Rose conversation with Corinne Bailey Ray. Stay with me.
Download the SoCal Sound mobile app and listen wherever life takes you.
This holiday season, make it about generosity and making a difference. Your year-end and vehicle donations fuel our ability to provide a musical sanctuary from all of the chaos and clutter. Pick up your SoCal Sound Give Peace a Chance tote bag or give it to someone on your shopping list. We'll send it directly to them. Your contributions are considered tax deductible. It's all online at thesocalsound.org.
A college education helps open doors of opportunity. And whether you're the first in your family to go to college or you're continuing a family tradition, you'll find the support you need at California State University Northridge. A CSUN education will prepare you for a successful future. Plus, it's affordable. Nearly 90% of CSUN students receive financial aid. It's not too late to apply for fall 2024. Visit csun.edu to learn more and apply by January 31st.
At the SoCal Sound, we offer more than just airtime. We offer a chance to align your brand with credibility and trust. Our team of experts will work closely with you to create a compelling message. When you partner with the SoCal Sound, you help support your community and public radio. To learn more about partnership opportunities, visit us at thesocalsound.org. The SoCal Sound, elevating public radio, elevating your brand.
Where Southern California discovers new music
and rediscovers great music.
88.5 The SoCal Sound.
You're listening to She Rose, and I'm Carmel Holt. The award-winning British artist Corinne Bailey-Rae first came to international acclaim with her 2006 self-titled debut album and especially the song Put Your Records On. The album was massive. Corinne Bailey-Rae became the fourth female British act in herstory to have her first album debut at number one. In 2007, Corinne scored three Grammy nominations, Record of the Year, Song of the Year for Put Your Records On, and Best New Artist. She was also nominated for three Brit Awards and won two MOBO Awards. Then personal tragedy struck in 2008 when her husband suddenly died of an accidental overdose. Corinne Bailey-Rae took a hiatus from music, and her next album, The Sea, featured songs written before and after his death and was nominated for the Mercury Prize in 2010. Next came The Heart Speaks and Whispers in 2016, which debuted at the top of Billboard's R&B chart and landed on many critics' year-end best-of lists. The other side of repeated success is industry expectations and sometimes even self-doubt about one's ability to live up to previous work and achievements. Corinne Bailey-Rae found her way to breaking free of all of that when she discovered the work of artists The Astor Gates and the Stony Island Arts Bank in Chicago. What began as something she was calling an art project became Corinne Bailey-Rae's newest chapter, the critically hailed Black Rainbows, her fourth album and first in 7 years, and expanding her musical and artistic universe to encompass music for contemporary dance, a book, live performances, visuals, lectures, and exhibitions. And most importantly, following her muse and shedding preconceived notions of her creativity has led Corinne Bailey-Rae to a transformative moment of reframing how she sees herself as an artist. I think Pitchfork said it best. It sounds like a departure, but feels like a renaissance. I'm thrilled to welcome Corinne Bailey-Rae as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. Corinne Bailey-Rae, welcome to Shiro's. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Congratulations on Black Rainbows. Any reflections thus far on the reception of the album or the album itself?
I still feel like I'm in the really early stages where I don't have much time to catch my breath. But I think my main reflections are that there was such excitement for me and trepidation in starting our US tour because we were touring before the record actually came out. So I was able to see the difference between playing to crowds who had never heard the album, and then later on in the tour, I'd start to tell a story and I'd see people react and think, oh, they know which song I'm talking about. You know, they've been able to hear it. And now, you know, I never read reviews, but my team was saying, oh, there's some good reviews. And then, you know, I think the only feedback I've got is face-to-face with people in the audience, getting to talk to people after the show, and then really, you know, getting to talk to people like yourself, you know, being interviewed about the album.
And not only has it been 7 years between The Heart Speaks and Whispers and Black Rainbows, but I understand that the project itself was in process for, was it like all of that time or most of that time?
I think it was all of the time, really, between The Heart Speaks and Whispers and this project. You know, I was on tour with The Heart Speaks and Whispers when I first encountered the Stony Island Arts Bank. And I think it took me a while to realize that I was making a record. First of all, I thought it was going to be some poems. And then I thought, oh, maybe it's a few songs, maybe it's an EP. And then it just kept growing and growing and growing. In the end, I started 20 songs about the Arts Bank and the objects, the events that were happening in the building. So it kind of really slowly grew, and I didn't know how I was going to do it. And then, of course, I thought of it as a side project as well. So it was always separate to what I thought was my main sort of public facing music identity. You know, I sort of thought people are not really going to get this. It's not really like anything I've done before. I kept calling it an art project. And I said, oh, it's not going to have my name on it, which actually gave me loads of freedom in making the record. But yeah, that was the process for me, thinking, what am I doing? What's it going to be like? You know, rather than having it be so directional, thinking, here's my album. Like, let's get down to business.
There are pressures that come with having an established career, especially when you are massively successful, as you were with your albums. And I could see how this idea of shedding that persona and giving yourself permission and the freedom to really play and explore opened so many doors for you.
It really did. It made it feel like starting again in a way. You know, I thought, no one's going to have any expectations of this. And most importantly for me, I removed all my own expectations. I think when I'd made my previous record, I was thinking like the people I have partnered with in business, you know, so in a way, I wasn't thinking like an artist anymore. I kept writing songs and I kept playing them to people, hoping this was the one they were going to get really excited about. And they would say, oh, will they say, yes. Yeah, it's a really nice song. It's beautiful, but you know, it's not the first single, or it's beautiful. It's not a radio song. And then I just sort of think like, oh, what's a radio song? So then for myself, I'd get to the point where I wouldn't play them a song, or worse than that, I wouldn't even finish a song. I'd think, this song's too weird. This song's too long. This song's too slow. This song's not about something that's universal enough. This song doesn't sound enough like what I've done before. And so I felt like I'd become my own gatekeeper, you know, that was really getting in the way of my creativity. So with this project, I thought, I don't have to think about any of that. I'm just going to make this music. You know, in my head, I kept saying it's an art project. And because I thought of it as art, and because I was hanging around with all these amazing visual artists who were filmmakers and sculptors and painters and ceramicists and documentary makers, and I saw them following their own muses and obsessions, you know, I could see the fire in people. And I thought, I really relate to that thing where it's the last thing you think about when you go to bed, and it's the first thing you think about when you wake up. And that's how the Stony Island Arts Bank became for me, that these archives, they were really on my mind. So that freedom in being able to make it into music and not think, is it a radio song? That was so valuable to me on this album.
We have Corinne Bailey Ray with us. The new album is Black Rainbows. Where would you like to start today musically?
This song, Erasure, was inspired by the Ed Williams collection in the Stony Island Arts Bank. There was this black and Chinese banker called Ed Williams who would go to flea markets and yard sales and see these problematic objects from America's past, maybe newspaper articles, leaflets and pamphlets, photographs, adverts, and then objects for the home, derogatory objects, you know, they've been dubbed Negrobelia, the cookie jars shaped like black mammies, or the cartoon things, grotesque things, images from racial violence, lynchings. He would see these things for sale and look at the other people who were potentially wanting to buy them and think, let me buy these things. We just put them in all these boxes in this house. And then once he had 16,000 of these objects, you know, it was kind of too much for him to live around and for his children. So he donated them to the bank through Theaster Gates. And so when I was encountering it, I just saw these same themes over and over, you know, the erasure of black childhood, the erasure of black femininity, that black women being shown as grotesque, either sort of hypersexualized or domestic objects. And then, you know, these images mostly of men in victims of racial violence, you know, these photographs that were taken at lynches that then became postcards, and encountering those postcards and thinking, how many people have to say yes for an image like that to become a postcard? You know, you have to have the photographer, you have to have the printer, you have to have the person who decides to stock it in their store. I'd be really intrigued by the writing on the back of these postcards. You know, I turn them over and think, what am I about to encounter? This super racist person, you know, is this going to be a sort of anti-black diatribe on the back? And the postcards would say things like, dear mum and dad, I've just arrived in Georgia. I could smell the peach trees through the train window. Please kiss, you know, Auntie so-and-so for me, and pet the dog. I'll see you soon. You know, they were so normal, caring, loving. There was such a disconnect between what was on the front of the postcard and what was on the back. And so, yeah, I thought a lot about the subject of erasure and what happens when we don't see each other as people. And that came into this song, Erasure.
Yeah.
That's track three on Black Rainbow's Erasure. And Corinne Bailey Ray is here with us on She Rose. This is her fourth album and her first in 7 years. It's so amazing that your work now has intersected with the work of Theaster Gates. I love the story. You kind of stumbled on this in a way, right?
It's amazing to me that you can have so many chance encounters. I mean, I always feel that with any kind of relationship in your life, whether it's a friendship or someone who becomes a mentor or a romantic partner, you think, what are the chances of, I always think, I don't know if I'm a pessimistic in that way, but I think what an amazing thing that we met. And then my fearful side says, gosh, wouldn't it have been terrible if we had never met, you know, like if our eyes had not met over a crowded room or however it becomes with the people that change your life. But certainly I saw this photograph of Theaster Gates on a friend's Pinterest board. She had this board called Artists and Their Workspaces. So I would look at it and sometimes it would be Picasso painting with his light pen in his studio or Kara Walker with her silhouettes. And I saw this photograph of this man, this black man staring out of the frame with this real kind of self-possession and peaceful confidence. And then in the background, you know, it was a photograph from White Cube, was all this very weird contemporary art, which I just didn't understand, you know, piles of bricks and a weird goat on spindly legs going around a circular train track. And he had a picture of Harold's chicken shop where a chef is chasing after a chicken with a meat cleaver. But I just thought, who is this man? Who is this black man in contemporary art that's not doing figurative art, right? It's not paintings of people. It's stuff. It's some fire hoses flattened out and put on a wall, or it's ceramics. But they're talking about the mixture of Japan and Africa. Like, I just wanted to know who he was. And then I found out that also part of his practice is saving these buildings from disrepair and bringing them back into the community for art and people to come together. And I really liked that. You know, I always like when people make something and then turn it around and use the heat that they're getting, you know, to be able to put back into the rest of the world, you know, into the community. And so I was desperate to see the building. When I flew into Chicago for that show, I told someone, oh, I really wish I'd mentioned it earlier, but I really want to meet this artist. And then I was very lucky. My manager at the time tracked Theaster down and he came to the show. And then from then on, we just got on like a house on fire. And, you know, he took me to the building. And so he's become such an important mentor to me. You know, I'm so glad I met him and have been able to encounter the Arts Bank, but also to be around someone who it feels like there's no limits to their creativity. You know, it's all different mediums, it's different times, it's different collaborations with people, and it's all valid, but it's all tied together with such clear thought. And it's been a challenge to me to think, you know, what could I do? What could I make? Why am I thinking of myself as kind of a failed pop star instead of thinking of myself as an artist and someone who can use music and someone who has a unique talent? Why am I thinking, oh, I'm not quite doing what I should be doing, or I'm not doing as well as this person or that person? Why am I not using my moment and my ability to really say what I want to say? So that was the main thing with this record, of like, what are you doing with your life and what are you doing with your creativity, and why not as well, you know, which I saw with him and the other artists that he introduced me to. It's like, they're doing what they want to do. Why aren't I doing what I want to do?
You are not only stretching your musical boundaries, but also the expression of what this project is. It's taking many forms and already has. You want to talk to us a little bit about the extension of Black Rainbows into kind of a multidisciplinary project?
Yes, I felt like these stories were too big to be contained in just the songs. You know, so early on in the year at Easter time, I worked with this really brilliant choreographer in Leeds where I live. She's called Sharon Watson. She's about 10 years older than me, a black woman who, she's really a leader in her field in the UK. I did this dance piece with her. It's called Seeds, Dreams and Constellations. And it was a lot of the music which became Black Rainbows. Again, I'd never been around dance before. I thought it was going to be just 5, 6, 7, 8. So she had this dance piece. And then, yeah, we worked together, Seeds, Dreams, Constellations. It was 3 nights, 40 dancers. And we played some live music as well, where we improvise and they improvise. And then we've made this book. I really wanted people to see what the Arts Bank looks like. The photographer is Koto Balofo, who is a South African photographer who I've loved. He's worked in fashion a lot, and then he's recently moved more into sort of archive and still life. But he's a really good and joyous fashion photographer, and I've always wanted to work with him. So having him involved was good as well, because he has all his perceptions about race. You know, South Africa is its own planet in terms of the construction of race. You know, I have a white parent and a black parent. So in South Africa, I wouldn't have been considered black or white. I would have been a whole separate race called coloured. I wouldn't have been able to spend time with my black family in public or my white family in public. I wouldn't have been able to live in the same area as them. So, I mean, I think when you're from a place that has these constructs of race and then you come up somewhere else, it's so easy to see how made up the rules were in that place. And then, of course, he came to Europe and he works in America and he gets to see what European racism looks like or what American racism looks like. They're all made up things. Of course, they have a real effect, but they're not real in themselves in terms of being rules or biology or... So I really wanted to work with him, and he did some really beautiful photos in the Arts Bank. And then we've done some talks. I got to talk with Professor Daphne Brooks at Yale University, who's a big music writer and, you know, historian, literature professor. And, you know, she's a black woman. But it was amazing to be able to talk to her about, you know, the science fiction writer, the black science fiction writer, Octavia Butler. And in nearly the same sentence, be able to talk about Hole's album Live Through This and how much she loved that. You know, I feel like I never really get to talk about both those things in the same context. So it was great talking to Daphne Brooks. Or, you know, we're at Spelman, we're going to Fisk, we're going to Columbia. So it's just been a joy to be invited into those spaces. You know, we're at this Black Artist Retreat in Chicago and being around all these filmmakers, poets, archivists, you know, curators who are doing so much in the world, and feel like I had a space, you know, feel like I was appreciated. That was really, really great to me.
Full circled back to the beginning of the conversation where I said Black Rainbows is speaking to your multidimensional nature as an artist. And because we're in the Shiro zone, I was hoping that we could spend a little bit of time talking about some of this stuff in that framework of being, I'm going to put this in air quotes, a woman in music.
Yeah.
I guess maybe a very broad question would be, what can you tell us or share with us about even some of the things that we've talked about so far today, put in that framework?
I think it's always difficult to talk about the thing of being a woman because, of course, you have never been anything else. So I only know this version of me. But I think that in terms of being able to walk into an industry with a sense of power and self, I think that really came from having been in a band, a totally independent indie band, you know, to the extent when literally only 90 people have ever heard of us. You know, so I think coming from that background where, you know, you had to book your own gigs, you had to make your own posters, you had to carry your own instruments into town in a taxi or a bus and pack up afterwards by yourself and know how stuff worked and, you know, win the recording time and run it as the producers. Like, I felt going in to make my first record that I had a little bit of space, you know, as a woman and a little bit of sense of independence. And we made my first album independently. I made it with this producer called Steve Chrysanthou, who I'd met through my manager at the time. And we made it underneath this art shop. His wife was a wildlife painter. So she'd be upstairs doing tigers and we'd be downstairs doing, you know, Put Your Records On or Butterfly or something. And then, you know, she'd kind of pop down and listen and had lots of cups of tea. But there wasn't a massive pressure around that record. And then when it was finished, we were able to go in and, you know, sort of shop it around, see if anyone liked it. I felt like because of that, I feel like I arrived with a certain amount of strength. You know, I think it would be different going in saying, hi, I'm a singer, songwriter, you know, kind of put stuff around me. I felt like because I'd worked in this jazz club, I'd already made all these friends. So I could say, oh, yeah, this is the band that's going to play on it. And I'd made the record. So, as you know, me and the producer have made this music. I'm the songwriter. So, you know, I don't need to be kind of wheeled around all these different people. That gave me a strength. And I think that really set a precedent for my work going forwards. I also think, in terms of being a woman, that my presentation really helped in the sense that if you're a really young woman and you're really conventionally attractive, like in a sexy way, I feel like there's a more of an opportunity in that respect to kind of market you in a particular way. And I see it happen with lots of young women. I feel like because I didn't fit that role, which of course wasn't anything to do with my own choice, it was just the way that I ended up, that's my body type and my look. You know, I think I don't have big boobies. I am a black person, and this was in the early 2000s, so there wasn't that same pressure, I think, as if you were either a really good-looking black rapper or hip-hop star or a really good-looking white pop artist, you know, that I think is different than me sort of turning up like, I'm riding a bike in a kind of a vest with my hair in curls. And, you know, as hard as they might have tried, the way that I looked couldn't be pushed down that avenue. And what happened in the British press for me, my music came out around the same time as Amy Winehouse and Lily Allen, is that I was always sort of compared to them and thought of as kind of somehow innocent, you know, butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. And because my music wasn't really, it didn't have this big sex context to it, the way the British press kind of received me was that I was somehow vanilla, that I was kind of almost childlike, that I didn't know the sexy rock and roll heart of music, not like Amy stumbling out of bars. And, you know, it was a time of upskirting where people would take photographs of people's clothes, and or not like Lily Allen because she would swear or she would talk about, you know, sexual encounters. And it was weird because it was almost like, okay, you can be a woman in music, but you have to give us what we want, which is that we want to see your boobs pushed up in a bra. We want to hear you talking about this one night stand that you had. We want to hear you talking about sex in your music. We want to feel like we've got a chance, you know, like from a sort of male journalist point of view, we want to feel like in order for us to say, oh, I would, you have to kind of put out in terms of the content. And I was really aware that I wasn't putting out in the content.
And what about now in the context of Black Rainbows?
I guess in the context of Black Rainbows, I just feel like I'm being fully myself. And that is, you know, being a 44-year-old woman, that includes everything. It's like, I'm on tour, I'm with my children, I'm literally like breastfeeding one, wiping a bum, getting my dread jumpsuit on and getting on stage. Like, I am under no illusions about the sort of glamour of touring. You know, it's very much like being in a traveling circus. But I feel so integrated because on that stage, I'm able to bring my girl self and my woman self. I'm able to be there in my aggression and in my joy and in my sexuality. And so it feels really good to have made this space or won this space or given myself these permissions to show all these different parts of me and to have not felt I'd had to correct anyone about their illusions of me, but just to kind of carry on being myself. You know, that feels like the right reward.
Kern Billy Ray here with us on She Rose. The new album is Black Rainbows. I was thinking perhaps we could play He Will Follow You With His Eyes.
I love He Will Follow You With His Eyes. And that really does speak about, I guess, the expectations around women and the male gaze. I was in the Arts Bank and I opened a drawer and I found this little tin of this product, this sweet Georgia Brown, and saw that it was part of a beauty company called Valmore. And I was able to find adverts for Valmore. Valmore was very popular in the 50s and 60s, and it was targeted at black men and women. The line drawings for Valmore were very elegant and they were done by this black artist called Charles Dawson. So it contrasted with other stuff in the Ed Williams. It wasn't cartoonish. It wasn't grotesque. It was beautiful. It was elegant. But of course, the beauty, with it being the 50s, is very much along sort of white aligned beauty. So the sweet Georgia Brown cream is a skin lightening cream, or there'd be hair pressing oil. So you can take your hair from afro hair, which was undesirable, to straight hair, which is obviously closer to a white beauty. And these products were sold door to door. You know, I thought about what it must be like to receive, you know, a beautician who's selling this, and how it was marketed in a really romantic way. So if you bought a perfume, it might be called Follow Me Boy or Look Me Over. If you read print adverts of Valmore, the title would be His Eyes Would Follow You Across the Room. So there was this tie with beauty equals progress in the world. Beauty can raise your status if you're willing to move a bit further towards white beauty standards. And so when I wrote the song, I really wanted the first half of the song to be as though the person was very much under the spell of Valmore, you know, dreamy sort of 50s music and strings and vibraphones. And, you know, he will follow with his eyes. That's the promise of the potion I buy. And they're very much under the spell of Valmore. And then halfway through, there's a kind of sonic interruption where the person rejects these values and comes into their own beauty and self-acceptance along their lines of ethnicity And so I enjoy so much performing this song live, because the first part, I'm in my Shirley Bassey Eartha Kitt theatrics, and then I get to go into this really solid kind of directed phrase where I'm singing about plum red lipstick and black hair kinking and black skin gleaming.
Then he'll follow you with his eyes. Plum red lipstick, my black hair kinking, my black skin gleaming, my plum red lipstick, my plum red lipstick.
He will follow you with his eyes. On Black Rainbows, we have Corinne Bailey Ray with us on She Rose. I'm Carmel Holt. All right. The She Rose magic wand is how we close each episode with the first wave of the wand. What would you change in music for women, non-binary folks, queer folks?
I think I would change the representation. You know, I would love to hear music made where 50% of the music was really made by and of and from women and non-binary folks and queer people and trans women. And just to hear a wider perspective in music, I think it would be so magical and valuable. You know, there's so many female artists we see and we think, oh, great, I'm getting to hear her. And then when you look through the credits, you know, there's her, there's three men on the songs that are all in their 50s, a dude's produced it, you know, that it's gone through the male record label. And I was thinking, like, I want to hear what she thinks. You know, I'd rather almost hear her sing into her phone and play on some pots and pans, but really just like, what is it when it's not edited? What is it when it's not filtered? What is it when it's not policed? What do you really have to say when you're not thinking, you know, are men going to like this? You know, I really like the idea of that. So that'd be in music. I'd love to just hear more women's stories and women's voices.
With thanks to Corinne Bailey Ray, can you pick a track to take us out with today?
I would like to play Earthlings. I really like the idea of someone from another planet looking in at what we do and saying, you know, all you have to do is start again. You know, there's so much possibility for change and transformation personally, but also in how we run the world. I really feel that.
Thanks again to Corinne Bailey Ray. Thank you for being with us on She Rose. What a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Carmel.
Massive thanks to Corinne Bailey Ray for being with us. Black Rainbows is out now on 30 Tigers. Catch her on tour in select cities this February. Today's conversation has been condensed and edited for broadcast. To hear the full interview, download and subscribe to the She Rose podcast, available everywhere. Next, we close the hour with a pair of songs from two upcoming 2024 albums I'm super excited about, Adrienne Lenker of Big Thief and her Ray for the Riff Raff. Stay with me.
Happy New Year from all of us at 88.5 The SoCal Sound.
It's She Rose Radio, and I'm Carmel Holt, closing the hour with songs from two 2024 albums I'm extra excited for. First, the new one from Adrienne Lenker of Big Thief. Here's Ruined.
Till I'm brave enough to call.
I just fall through every time. I wish I'd waved when I saw you. I just watched you passing by. So much coming through every hour too. Can't get enough of you. You come around, I'm ruined. You come around, I'm ruined. You gave me no answer, nor asked me to lie. You just gave from your jeweled vest as you cried. So much coming through every hour too. Can't get enough of you. You come around, I'm ruined. You come around, I'm ruined. So as the fern bent to the window, and we drew to alignment as the water soaked the pillow.
Maybe you're all snake eyes. Baby, tell me why. You gotta play your luck. Do aces call your bluff? I love you very much. And all that other stuff. Thawing out my heart like meat. I see your track marks broken through your hoodie sleeve. Tic-tac-toe game to the destiny. I grieve. Marching towards East River Park. You told me your big secret on the FDR. I couldn't hear you over choppers and the buzzing cars. So far. You know that time can take you for a spin. Can really do you in. Can leave you with the bends, baby. Try to live again and play another hand. Maybe we'll start a band. I want you to understand, baby. Help me understand. Cause you don't have to die if you don't want to die. Maybe I got something left that is worth a try. But I'm not gonna be your alibi this time.
From Melinda Segarra, a.k.a. Hooray for the Riff Raff, The Past is Still Alive is their ninth studio effort, and that will be coming on February 23rd. And from it, that was Alibi. Also, Adrienne Lenker of Big Thief will return this year with a new solo record, and we heard the first offering from it called Ruined. That does it for this week's edition of Shiro's Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in wherever you may be listening. Together, let's keep turning up the volume. Shiro's Radio is produced by me and is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Download and subscribe to the Shiro's podcast, featuring full versions of our Shiro's interviews on the Talkhouse Podcast Network, available everywhere. And keep in touch. Call or text our new toll-free Shiro power line. That's 833-MY-SHIRO. 833-MY-SHIRO to make a request or leave us a message. Visit shirosradio.com. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at Shiro's Radio on Instagram and Twitter. And until next time, remember, music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.
88.5 FM, KCSN, and KCSN HD1 Northridge, Los Angeles. KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo. A service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.